Years back, a famous classical pianist came to the States for his farewell tour and read an interview in the newspaper where they asked him about his playing. He said, when you're playing the piano, you have to be aware of what you've played, what you're playing right now, and where you want it to go. And make adjustments. You intend a phrase to go in a certain direction, but as you're playing it, you find it's not going in that direction. And you have to decide, do you want to follow it this new way, or do you want to try to rein it in and get it back in line with where you wanted it to go before? So in other words, you're aware of the past, you're aware of the present, you're aware of the future, even as you're playing right there in the present moment. And the same approach applies to the meditation. You're focusing on the breath in the present moment, but you're also keeping in mind where you want to go, what you want to do right now, because what you're doing right now has a shape. And it shapes not only the experience you're having right now, but it shapes where you're going to go. Keeping the past in mind, both your ideas about where you want it to go, why you want to go there, and that's your motivation. And your ability to remember what you've done in the past to get it in the right direction. That's the role of mindfulness. Alertness is what's watching what's happening right now. And ardency is actually what's doing right now, and at the same time shaping it for the purpose of the future. So you've got the three qualities of the establishing of mindfulness right here as you're working with the breath. It is true, as the Buddha said, that there's a certain nourishment that comes from staying right with the present moment. There's a sutta where Deva asks the Buddha, why is it that the monks in the forest seem so bright and happy? And he says, because they're not worried about the past, not concerned about the future. They're surviving on the present, feeding themselves off the present moment. But that doesn't mean they don't have any relationship to the past or future at all. After all, to get the mind into the present moment requires some skill, and you have to be able to remember what's involved in the skill. How do you make the most of the breath in the present moment? How do you get the mind to be willing to settle down? These are things you remember from what you've learned in the past. If you're feeling cold, what do you do to warm yourself up with the breath? Okay, there's a memory there of what you've heard in the past, and then you're alert to what you're doing right now to see if you're actually doing it. And then you work at it. You keep in mind the idea that this is going to take some time, so you don't get discouraged or disgruntled with the whole thing. You just drop it. You say, okay, this is going to take a little while. So even though I'm not seeing immediate results right now, I'm going to work on it, and the results will come down the line. So you are referring to the past, present, and future all the time. So when you're meditating, it's an issue of how to do that skillfully. Because this move toward the future, that's what craving is all about. There are some forms of craving, after all, that are the cause of suffering, but the Buddha also recognized that there is a kind of craving that is involved in the path. You've heard that other people have gained true happiness, and you want that happiness. And this is a sutta where he calls craving your companion. Everywhere you go, you're talking with your cravings about where you want to go. What's next? What's next? What next? Where am I going to go now? Where am I going to feed next? That's usually the big question. When you pare things down in the present moment to see what is this movement that moves to the future, that's what the big question is. Where do I feed next? Where is important? Because the mind does have the sense that it could focus here or there, not only in a sense of a physical location, but also in a sense of kind of a mental location. What topic in the mind do you want to focus on now? Do you want to stay here? Or do you want to move on? That's all an issue of craving. And that's your companion. That's who you're talking to all the time. So you want to, as that chant we chanted just now says, you want to choose your friends well. Who are true friends? You have cravings that flatter and control, that just want to get a quick hit of pleasure and then run away and leave you holding the bag. Those are false friends, those kind of cravings. You want a craving that helps you, that is sympathetic to your well-being. And the desire for happiness, that's a true friend among your cravings. So choose your cravings well. Craving isn't abandoned totally until the end of the path. As Ananda says to that Brahmin, when the Brahmin asks him, what's one of the purposes of this path? And Ananda says, well, one of the rewards of the path is that you put an end to desire. And the Brahmin asks how you to do that. And Ananda lists the four bases for success. And they start with desire. Moves on to persistence, intent, and then finally your powers of analysis. And the Brahmin says, well, in that case, it's impossible. How can you use desire to get rid of desire? And Ananda basically said, well, you act on it. That's the essential meaning of what he said. But he gives the example of them going there to the monastery. When you wanted to come to the monastery, didn't you have a desire? Yeah. And now that you're at the monastery, what happened to that desire? Well, it's gone. And same way, you're going to be using craving along the way. When you finally get to the goal, the need to feed is gone. There's no sense that you have to exist anywhere. They keep describing the Arahant as someone who is everywhere released. Well, there's no there in the Arahant's mind. No, there's no center of desire around which a becoming would form. But in the meantime, you've got to use this process. You're going to take on the becoming of concentration. That requires a desire. So choose your desires well. Choose your cravings well. So they lead you in the direction you want to go. And as you settle in, you find that there's less and less involved. In the beginning, you have to think about things. What kind of breathing is good? When the breathing is getting comfortable, what do you do to make sure that you don't just kind of blur out into a state of delusion concentration? In other words, concentration without mindfulness, where you're just still but not really clear about where you are. One of the signs of delusion concentration is that when you come out of it, there's that question, well, was I really awake just now? Was I asleep? You're not really sure. That's not where we want to go. So you have to remember, if you have that tendency, then you have to prepare for it as the mind is beginning to settle down and things are comfortable. Spread your awareness around. Explore the different parts of the body and the breath energy in the different parts of the body. Give the mind work to do so it doesn't just blur out. This is one of the reasons why we don't have long group meditations here at the monastery. Because I've noticed in monasteries where they do have that, one of the ways of checking out is to go into this state. But it doesn't lead anywhere. So what you've got to do is prepare yourself, remember ahead of time that you have this problem and work to counteract it. And as the mind settles in and you're alert and you're clear, then you can start dropping a lot of the analysis. Because your awareness is strong, your concentration is strong, the center is strong. Your awareness fills the body. And there's a lot less tending to it that you have to do. You simply think of opening things up and connecting things inside. The connections get very subtle. All of these things are things you remember. And then you apply it to the present moment. It's your applied memory that we're talking about here. And you know it's going to carry on into the present moment. You just very carefully nudge it along, keep it in balance. So even though your sense of past and future get somewhat attenuated, still there's a little bit there. Because you have to realize that even a very strong state of concentration, there is going to be this element of craving that keeps moving on, moving on, moving on. And you want to get very, very, very still so you can recognize it. So we're not just blanking out. Our mental faculties are all brought together, gathered right here. It's just that when they're really balanced, there's a sense of smoothness, a sense of flow. In which what you want to do is what you are doing. Sometimes people think that this is the awakened state. It's not. It's just a very successful desire, a very successful craving. Those are the times when our sense of self gets really expanded. And you're not really conscious of yourself that much because everything's going the way you want it. It's when you're encountering obstacles, that's when you have a very strong sense of you as being separate from the obstacle. And the obstacle's in the way of where you want to go. But as the obstacles get smoothed out and your path here through the hour being concentrated gets smoother, your sense of self will get attenuated, but don't think it's gone away. It's just there in the background. And it keeps asking that little question, what next, what next? And as long as what next is moving smoothly, you don't really notice it until you start asking yourself questions about it. But you also have to notice when you start asking questions about your concentration, does it destroy it? If it does, your concentration isn't strong enough for those questions. So you come back and settle in again. And as you find, as you get this kind of food for the mind, you can look back on the other things you used to feed on. And they don't look all that appealing. As I was noting this afternoon, John Sawat's sort of quick and ready answer as to what the cause of suffering is that it's your likes. The things that you like to do, things that you like to focus on, things that you like to enjoy. And those are very hard to give up, because we tend to identify ourselves around them. We feel that if we aren't able to pursue our likes, what's the purpose of doing anything at all? One of the purposes of concentration, then, is to give you something better to like. So once you've got this and you realize, okay, this is a really good state of mind, this is the pleasure that comes from this is the pleasure you're looking for anyhow and all those other things. And it's a lot more solid, a lot more reliable, and a lot more blameless. The mind is a lot clearer. This is a kind of pleasure that doesn't require you to take anything away from anyone else. Then using this, you can start looking back on those other desires and say, I don't really go for those anymore. The things you used to like a lot. You basically matured. You've outgrown them. Because you have a new range of skills. So choose your cravings carefully. Choose your cravings well. Because some kinds of cravings lead to suffering and others lead to the end of suffering. So you want to recognize which is which.